Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. When presenting a series of lessons on a given theme, it is usually profitable to spend a few moments at the beginning of each segment to review previous lessons. However, we're talking about the time when the judgment was taken away from the Lord. Justice, fairness, impartiality, he was deprived of all of this. And in our first lesson, this being the second, we studied the seizure of Jesus and his alleged arrest there in the Garden of Gethsemane, and all of the injustices that took place in that event. And when we left Jesus at the end of the first lesson, he was being led through the dark streets of Jerusalem toward the place occupied by the high priest. His enemies had him well in hand. Now Jesus underwent three religiously controlled trials before the Jews before he was subjected to three trials before the Roman authorities. Palestine, of course, was then a province of the Roman Empire, and the Jews were subject to the Roman governor, and at this time it was a man named Pontius Pilate. It was Rome's policy to allow her conquered subjects a considerable degree of local rule, but reserving certain matters for themselves. And among the prerogatives Rome reserved for herself was the execution of the death penalty. Even though the Jews might pass a death sentence against someone according to their law, they were not permitted to carry it out. The Jews had already determined in their mind that Jesus must be put to death. Therefore, there was the need of the Roman trials that followed the religious ones. But Jesus was first taken before a man named Annas, an elderly man of some 70 years of age, who had been a high priest nearly 20 years before this time, but who had been deposed by Tiberius from that position. And in his place was his son-in-law, a man named Caiaphas. In reality, Caiaphas was more a figurehead than an authority among the Jews, because Annas was still virtually the prime ruler of Jewish society and theocracy. Annas asked Jesus about his teaching. In John 18 and verse 19, the Lord replied, "I spake openly to the world. I ever taught in the synagogue and in the temple, whither the Jews always resort, and in secret I have said nothing. Why askest thou me? Ask them which heard me, what I have said unto them. Behold, they know what I said." Now Annas was fishing for some accusation that could justifiably be placed against Jesus. At that point he had none to make, even though Jesus had already been arrested. In essence, Jesus threw a challenge to Annas to produce his charges, produce his witnesses, produce the evidence to sustain them. The guard standing by must have recognized the humiliation of Annas and came to his defense and slapping Jesus at his remark. Jesus then said, "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why smitest thou me?" From this, Annas could see that he had before him no ordinary adversary. This entire procedure was the bidding of the Jews, and so the Jews should have had the evidence to justify it. And they were a bit late to try to concoct some evidence with which to accuse him. As one surveys all the religious trials, it seems that this first session, this one before Annas, immediately an illegal action because Annas had no legal authority, was to make it plain that the actual leaders of the Jewish people desired his destruction, and they had operated behind the scenes in the entire conspiracy. They had to get the word from the big boss before they went further, and they came to Annas to get it, and they got it. While this illegality and injustice was being conducted, a hastily called meeting of the Sanhedrin was assembling. All the formal actions of the Jews had to be made by the authority of the Sanhedrin, the most powerful and supreme ruling body among the Jews. Now, having received word from Annas, Caiaphas had to ratify everything in order to make it acceptable to the Romans. And darkness still prevailed. And this became significant later. Several witnesses, if you want to call them that, were brought against Jesus. Their testimony was prearranged, and they were well instructed what to say. Again, this adds to the injustice and the unfairness of it all, does it not? Christ was charged with blasphemy against the temple, a crime punishable by death, according to the Jews. Matthew 26:61, one said concerning Christ, "This fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and build it in 3 days." Well, actually, this man misquoted Jesus, and he misunderstood what he actually had said. When we read in John 2, when Jesus spoke words similar to these, he had said, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." But he spake of the temple of his body. He was not talking about the Jewish temple, nor the temple of God. Nor did he say the temple of God. But to this charge Jesus answered not a word. Would it have been any different? Would it have made any difference? Certainly not to those who were determined to kill him, regardless of what he had to say. You see, friend, their mind was set. And their set of mind is proven by another question that was asked of Jesus. In Luke 22, "Art thou the Christ? Tell us." And he said unto them, "If I tell you, ye will not believe. And if I also ask you, ye will not answer me, nor let me go. Hereafter shall the Son of Man sit on the right hand of the power of God." Then said they all, "Art thou then the Son of God?" And he said unto them, "Ye say that I am." Now this was an affirmative answer. And they said, "What need do we have further witnesses? For we ourselves have heard of his own mouth." Has there ever been a group of people more prejudiced against another man than on this occasion? Were they not already decided what they would accept and what they would reject even before any evidence was presented? In their failure to recognize him from the prophets, and in their ignorance and vindictiveness, they said his admission of his identity negated any need of investigation. To them his claim condemned him. Now whether his claim was true or false did not seem to concern them in the least. They became so angry and upset at Jesus that they shouted and cursed. Even Caiaphas rent his clothes. It actually became a wild assembly. Jesus and his teaching had so exposed their evil, had so deflated their egotistical hypocrisy, and deprived them of their following, that his acknowledgement as the Son of God destroyed their self-composure. They then pronounced Jesus worthy of death. Wild animals could not have acted with less reason and intelligence. But the third part of these three religious trials was made necessary because the first two were illegal and could likely be dismissed by the Romans. The trial before Annas was before one who was not an accepted authority. Jesus before the Sanhedrin, although assembled to make things legal, was also illegal because it was conducted against the law to pronounce someone to death while darkness prevailed. So a third session had to be conducted once daylight came. It seems that these enemies of Christ went out of their way to accommodate certain regulations as they deliberately condemned an innocent man to death. So this third trial was brief and was really nothing but a formality. But what happened to Jesus between the second and third session, both before the Sanhedrin, gives emphasis to the fact that justice was denied him. Jesus was thrown as prey to the rabble of the palace, much like raw meat might be thrown to a hungry pack of wolves. They flung the prisoner about from one to another, only as a mob can do. They slapped him, they beat him, they cursed him, pushing and knocking him with laughter and slander. Caiaphas, as well as the others of this august Jewish council, held their peace. They allowed it. It could well be that Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus, who are thought to have belonged to this council, witnessed this degradation being perpetrated against the Son of God. Surely there is no hatred nor bigotry as cruel and intense as religious hatred and bigotry. But with the breaking of the dawn, the horseplay and the abuse subsided. The death sentence was quickly ratified in daylight, and Caiaphas and his underlings took Jesus toward the Roman Praetorium to present him before Pontius Pilate and the Roman rule. And there they expected the death penalty to be confirmed and the execution of Jesus to become a quick reality. For by these actions, the Jewish accusers of Jesus once again demonstrated their desire for revenge and their hatred of Jesus Christ. According to Jewish law, as is revealed in the book of Deuteronomy, blasphemy was to be punished by death by stoning. Also, the stoned one was to be hanged with his hands fastened together. The manner of execution by the Romans was crucifixion, a slower, more painful death, an agonizing way to die. But the Jews did not care whether their part of the law was observed or not. Anything that would rid them of Jesus was what they would accept, and it mattered not what it required. As much as they hated the Romans, and they hated the Roman dominion over them, they hated Jesus more. And in this way, they would be able to force Jesus to a more painful and disgraceful way to die, and this pleased them. So we see the hope of the world being led away by this ruthless religious mob to a place where they would bend every effort and use every influence to hasten the end they desired. And they took him to the heathen Gentile court. In our third and final lesson on the humiliation of Christ and the time when his judgment was taken away, we're going to focus our attention on three trials before the Romans. And even if there should have been a turn of events at this point, we can already see how proper and fitting are the prophetic words of Isaiah regarding the trial of Jesus and how his judgment was taken away. And with the information we have thus far considered, how can anyone look with indifference upon Christ and his death at Calvary? As terrible as was his physical agony and abuse, that was the lesser part of his suffering. Consider the mental agony. He was forsaken by those nearest him. He was cursed by those he came to save. He was denied by his own people. He was abused by those he wanted to help and had helped. Have you ever known of instances when mankind did so stain and corrupt their souls as when the enemies of Christ mistreated him? And again we ask, why did he do it? Friend, it was for me. It was for you. That we might be forgiven of our sins. That we might live a blessed life here on earth. And that we might enjoy heaven for eternity. Does not this impress you? This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.